Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Thanks to Jenny Green for bopping us along on this beautiful Tuesday, the 2nd of June. Welcome along, this is Game On.
Coming up today, why play in stadiums when training grounds are just as good? Mark Langdon on Real Madrid's approach to games behind closed doors.
With regular fixtures on the horizon, we're demystifying racing with Jane Mangan and Ruby Two. And golf in phase two with Gary Murphy.
Yes, and what everyone's talking about, and I know Ruby can't wait till we finally found an excuse to chat about normal people.
By we, you mean you.
Yeah, true.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, before we do get into normal people, it feels a bit like a normal day.
There's, it really does.
Yeah, because we have stuff to preview right across the board, not just the odd game here or there. We have lots of things coming up. We know golf is going to be back fairly soon, so Gary Murphy will be on to chat about that. Ruby and Jane are going to give us a lowdown on what we need to know about racing over the next few weeks, and Mark Langdon will chat to us about all the football. And on top of that, when you go on to any of the sports websites, there's just news about things coming back. We're going to have cricket in a few weeks. England are going to play three test matches in 21 days. In July, they're going to play against the West Indies. Formula One is coming back in Austria on July 5th. Even Craig Breen, our own motor racing star, he's decided when he's going to race again. So a great normal day.
Yeah, himself and Paul Nagel, they're going to hopefully go to Italy between the 24th and 26th of July for the Rally di Roma Capitale, driving their Hyundai i20 R5 car. So, and they could be in Finland then between the 6th and 9th of August. So I'm sure they're happy to have dates.
Life is good.
Marie, I love that you tweeted a calendar of the month, and I'd lost my diary. There was no need for it. And now all of a sudden we're jammers with sport. And you're right, it's going to be hard. Like, sports are really going to have to compete.
Every day, all day, every day.
It could be kind of, we watched Liverpool win the Premiership, and then I just watched three other class games after.
And they're going to have to do things that are innovative as well to try and compete. We know in the European Tour they're thinking about miking up players, and we're going to talk to Gary Murphy about that later on. New Zealand Super Rugby are going to replace red-carded players. And then drawn matches can be decided by golden point tiebreakers. So that's, they're going to trial that for the 10 weeks when the rugby resumes. So what do you think of that, Donegan?
I love it. It's the equivalent of the golden buzzer on Got Talent, isn't it? So basically, if a game finishes a draw, that whatever penalty, drop goal, try within 10 minutes. So I think it would put teams out to make it a bit entertaining. And like we said with hockey before, it would show a bit of attack. I do like the idea of the red card though. So what they're talking about is after 20 minutes you can replace the player that has been sent off, and to be harsh, a red card in rugby, it's game over. You might as well walk in off the pitch. I don't think it's just such a hindrance. I don't think you can win games anymore down to 14 players, so I think it's a good idea. It could force you to be a little bit cynical at the very start. I know if there were some teams you were going out, you'd kind of think, two sin binnings, it's probably worth taking that fella's head off. So I think...
Well, then how do you think it's a good idea if it's going to encourage people to play cynical?
No, I just think at the start, of course you don't want to be down. Two yellow cards, what's the points difference? I think it was in around 6 to 8 during a yellow card, Ruby. So you kind of go down maybe 16 points if you lost a man to a red card. And that's early in the game, but I just think red cards are ruining the game. You know, we saw it in the French game in the World Cup. You might as well just walk off after it. It's just such a... I just don't think it's a fair advantage in rugby. And you just want to see competitive games. I just think it's ruining it for the supporters.
I think, though, for the next 10 weeks, everything is worth trialling. Like, there is an opportunity now to do things a little bit differently because we're in such strange times and we're not... You know, it's not normal. We're not expecting when we turn on games that they're going to be like what we always saw because there's no fans there, for one. So I don't think there's any harm with just giving something a lash for a few weeks because you can always change back.
I like these though. I think these are, like, as opposed to messing around with the scrum, like, these are, I think this will make the game more entertaining and it's better for the game. Whereas messing around with the scrum, I just can't handle at all. Just leave it. It's a thing of beauty. Not people respect it, but it's massive for rugby.
It is, and that, but you were a forward, so you completely understand it. But when you're resetting the scrum for the fifth time, and you're a spectator looking in thinking, they just can't be falling down quite
yet. Yeah.
You're thinking, can I go get my drink and come back and they'll be doing it again?
I agree with that. You know, and
so that's what they're talking about messing with the scrum, is stopping the resetting the scrums. I don't see how that's a bad idea. That makes games quicker. It means players will have to play. It'll increase the intensity of it. That might increase the entertainment of it, Dunica.
Yeah, I agree. My only fear is with no resetting of scrums is that a ref just makes a free kick call for no reason. I do think the refs need probably support in that area, and that's probably good use of TMOs or touch judges or whoever it is, or assistant refs as they're called nowadays. You can't call them touch judges.
And would you have no fear that the 10 minutes that New Zealand are playing extra time and the golden score you win, but you get two teams slogging it out that are tired, they'll just play for 10 minutes and not really attack, just mess around for 10 minutes and the game is still a draw. It's not indefinite. There is.
They're going to have the likes of Simon Zeebo or someone who'll be energised by the thoughts of glory and
someone's going to go for it. Yeah, I think you're right, Ruby. But that's for me, that's interesting, isn't it? Just to see even what teams do. And I know, especially when we had Anthony Foley as coach, when new laws, and that's the thing about rugby. Rugby is a bit like hockey, that the rules kind of keep changing and keep moving along because it has to. So I think, but I remember a law would change and he'd have us all on it. Like, find the loophole here, lads, you know. And I think we all remember Conor Murray scoring a try that was over the line, and it was because he asked a smart question. He didn't say to the ref, "I've scored." He's there. There's no offside line in the in goal area, and it was just a brilliant question to put to a referee. And just
that's called a rhetorical question when you know the answer and you can't be wrong. Is that what it is? I think maybe something
your favourite
like that.
Type of questions, Ruby.
Yeah. Also, Dunica, at least the French top 14, the rugby league, didn't use your system of rock, paper, and scissors. They've just decided there'll be no champions or no relegation in their season, as they've called a halt to it. And David Humphreys has gone from Gloucester. He will leave after 6 years as director of rugby. He seems to have left with Johan Ekerman. He's a big brain in rugby and a big cog. You played with him, Dunica. Could you see him having a future somewhere else?
I definitely could. He's probably evolved along with rugby. Like we were chatting, I was chatting to Ron earlier on. The likes of Declan Kidney probably covered eight roles, whereas David Humphreys moved up to that role as director of rugby with Gloucester. And you're right, when Ackerman left, I think that was probably it. But just chatting to a few of the Gloucester lads that I would have known, this is a bit of a shock to them. They're really worried. You can imagine it, Ruby, if you're a player now at the moment, you've lost your head coach, you've lost your director of rugby, you've been asked to take a 25% wage decrease, and we're not chatting about an Irish system. This is run by owners. So they're really worried at the moment. Some of the players just kind of nearly fearful of what's going on with the club when you lose a good man like that. So you're right. I think he's got serious intellect and would be a good coup for anyone.
You'd have to wonder as well about all these roles, you know, these big roles. Will they all still exist when we come out the other side of this? We look at backroom teams. We spoke about it before, Dunica. Are there going to be places for everybody in the professional game? Because backroom teams and all that goes with it have expanded greatly over the last number of years as sports science has developed.
Absolutely. And look, I think we're going to be chatting to Mark Langdon about Real Madrid training or playing in their training grounds. But I think that's probably something you could see with an Irish model. I'm just picking rugby because it's my sport, of course. But like, could you use the same Irish physios and doctors for those interpros? So instead of needing four docs, you need, you know, just one. You know, is there ways of cutting numbers? But you're right, Marie. I do think it's going to tighten up and you're going to need guys to do a little bit more. So your skills coach could now be someone to cover kicking as well.
But there's going to be huge financial ramifications off the back of the coronavirus lockdown. So there will be job losses and those extras, like three and four people doing one job split up three or four different ways. That is definitely going to be tightened up and it is going to get very tight. But I could see a lot of backroom people coming under pressure when they're struggling to pay wages for the guys going on the pitches.
Yeah. Marie, Jurgen Klopp, he's not getting caught up on the celebrations.
Jurgen Klopp. Isn't it great to have Jurgen Klopp looking ahead to the season?
The ray of hope that is Klopp.
Yeah. Will we hear from him? We're in great form,
but
we'll take it to another level. Come on, Ruby, get on board.
If it happens, we are still not champions, so we have to play football games and we want it, and we have to win them on top of that. and we don't want to stop winning after two games or whatever. They are difficult enough. So our first three games are Everton, Crystal Palace and Man City. So I don't see any results written in the stars there already. We have to work really hard for that. Look, you celebrate always, wherever it is. You'll be celebrating the Champions League first in Madrid in a hotel. Yes, a lot of people around. You don't find time for your family and stuff like this. You can, if you want, you always can find any issues in the situation. If we will be champion, then whichever celebration is possible, we will do as a team internally and with all our supporters in a moment when it's allowed to do so again. And then I can promise, if it happens, there would be a parade as well. Whenever, who cares? We only need then one day where everybody is able to come, and then we will do that.
Jurgen Klopp speaking to the BBC earlier on. An interesting thing that he said, well, it's not that interesting, but it got me just thinking. He said, we're not champions yet. We have to play football games and we have to win them. And isn't that great? Like, just to even be, whatever about looking forward to a parade and celebrations, isn't the thoughts of watching Liverpool playing football again pretty good?
Yeah. No. Well, I love when he mentioned who cares. I thought of you straight away, Ruby. Do you he care? Did. Like,
yeah, he's dead right. Who cares? That Jurgen Klopp speaks the truth the whole time. He's dead right.
Marie, whatever about him, he's saying he can't celebrate. What are you going to do? Are you going to have a Zoom party? Like, say Liverpool.
She's
winning.
She's going to go on the last donors.
51552. Tweet us in or text us. Let us know what people are going to do. Not even for celebrations, but just for even for watching games, because it is a big deal for it to come back. What are people going to do? You're going to have parties, you're going to bring, are you allowed to do that? Friends around? I don't know.
You encouraging
anymore.
People to break the guidelines, Marie?
No, you could surely do it in your house.
You
with
can
your
watch
neighbors.
It in the garden.
Yeah.
Put it up on the wall in the back.
Have you not seen Crow's back garden? It is like Anfield.
Could get one of those projectors and put it up in the back, and, you know, all the neighbours could look over the wall. It'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay, so people, yes, text us in and let us know. Well, what are you going to do when the Premier League comes back? How are you going to watch the games? Are you going to have Zoom parties? What are you going to do? Let us know.
Yeah.
Before we go for a break, Donica, we're getting carried away. Our competition.
Totally carried away. Okay, just a
have
reason
your moment.
To talk about Normal People, which airs tonight on RT1. I think it's 10:15, roughly. I know it too well. So we've all seen Paul Mescal in his shorts. He's been parading around London in them any time we've seen him. So he's been proudly wearing O'Neill's, and O'Neill's thankfully have given us a beautiful O'Neill's hoodie, a hooded gilet. So to win the gilet, all we want to know is, Paul Mescal has been photoed in various O'Neill shorts in London lately, including his own GAA club, which he played for at home. So if you can tell us the name of the GAA club, you could be in with the chance to win this brilliant O'Neill's gilet hoodie. So 51552, your name and the answer, what GAA team did Paul Mescal play for? If you'd like to look at any of the beautiful shorts that Paul Mescal wear, or the rubies, or the gilets that Ruby loves, do visit www.oneills.com. So that's it.
You won't see any gilets I wear on there, Donica. They never gave me one. Oh, and you might need a hooded gilet tomorrow. The weather's going to change.
They have
it's time
been
to take
supporting.
A break, party, is it?
let's just cut him off now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. We mentioned a little bit earlier that football is starting to ease its way back into our lives, and we're pretty happy about that. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by Mark Langdon of the Racing Post. Mark, we're going to talk European football very, very shortly. But first of all, to cheer Ruby up, I'd like to talk about Manchester United. They finally got their man, albeit a lone man. Ighalo is going to stay with them for a little while anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, on loan now until January. I think common sense has prevailed. Obviously, you know, the end of the season was when the loan deal was supposed to end. The Premier League season not having yet finished. No sign yet of the Chinese one starting up either. I think Ighalo was kind of mocked, wasn't he, in places for when he first came. But he's proven, I think, to be exactly what he is. A good backup option for when Martial or Rashford not around. He's somebody that, you know, can be that penalty box predator, score goals. He's not going to do much in the build-up, but a different option, I think, to what they've already got. You know, Rashford and Martial like to drift into those wider areas, whereas Ighalo, you know, very much hangs around the sort of goal and is looking for the, you know, the tap-ins and stuff like that. So I think he's proven to be a very good signing so far, and probably will do now for the rest of the season.
I wish he was the answer to Manchester United's problems, but I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to have to do a bit more purchasing than just him this year.
I think that's a fair point. I'm really excited to see how Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba line up together. Of course, we haven't seen that combination yet. Fernandes made a sensational start, really, given, you know, many people would have expected him to take a little while to get used to life in Manchester, hit the ground running. If you can get Fernandes and Pogba both playing at their best, I think that will add a new dimension to, you know, what United offer in that central midfield area. Area for sure.
And just staying with potential transfers anyway, could we see Jeff Hendrick head over to AC Milan? It's a long way from Burnley.
It is, yeah. I mean, my eyebrows were raised when I saw this first pop up in the transfer sort of gossip columns. Was it yesterday or the day before? I'd say it's unlikely at this stage, and not just because of, you know, people thinking that's a big jump up from Burnley to Milan. It's just that Milan are in a sort of weird situation at the moment, in that they're desperate to bring in a new sporting director in Ralph Rangnick, and he is demanding, if he comes along and leaves the job that he's doing at RB Leipzig, he wants total power over sort of just about everything at the club. And that's why he hasn't arrived yet, because some debate as to whether he should have that much power. But if he does, I can't imagine that he'd sort of take it'd be too appreciated of the fact that, you know, signings were being made while he wasn't there. So I'd say sort of just hold your fire on that one for now. But they're not exactly blessed with loads of brilliant midfielders, Milan, so it's maybe not as big a jump as what you might imagine.
They're sort of 7th or 8th in the Serie A, aren't they? But they're still in the cup, Mark, so there could be a way into Europe for them that way, couldn't there?
Yeah, they could. I mean, it's been a season really that hasn't delivered for Milan, not for the first time. You know, that they've disappointed, already had one change of manager. And like I say, they're looking to maybe bring in now a new sporting director, or even suggesting that Rangnick could actually become the manager as well. So, it's not great behind the scenes, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's not all lost, for this season, and they've spent enough money over recent years to, you know, to be doing better. Just a long list of failures, particularly in sort of the managerial dugout, where they keep changing their mind on what it is they want. And I think that's why bringing in somebody like Rangnick could be so important for them, because you need to get that stability right. You know, too often they've been buying one set of players, then the new manager comes in, wants a different set of players. I mean, I suppose that would be a bit similar to what's happened at Manchester United since Sir Alex Ferguson left, where just this constant change of managers and different philosophies just leaves you with a really big and expensive squad.
Tonica mentioned at the start of the show that we're going to be, well, sports are going to be competing for all our attention. Is the Serie A something we should be glued to when it does restart on June 20th?
Well, yeah, we've got a thrilling title race this year, which is not something you can say every year in Italy, because Juventus have been so dominant, even though they've been pushed close a couple of times by Napoli. But this time, it's Lazio that have kind of gone toe-to-toe with them. Lazio last won the Scudetto when Sven-Goran Eriksson was the manager. You know, so they're not exactly used to winning titles, but they've had a brilliant sort of season so far. I suppose just guessing as to how they'll kind of come out of the lockdown and whether they'll be able to just pick up where they left off. But Ciro Immobile is outscoring Cristiano Ronaldo. They've beaten Juventus twice already this season, so they're not scared of the champions, and that's half the battle really in Italy. Too often Juventus have beaten the opposition before they've even turned up, just because, you know, of who they are and what they've won previously. So a absolutely fantastic title race in store. You'd still say that Juventus are the favourite, favourites just because of who they are and the fact they've got Cristiano Ronaldo as well. But Lazio are having a brilliant campaign. So too Lucas Leiva, of course, once of Liverpool. I think most people thought his legs had gone when he departed Anfield, but seems to have not the only sort of old stager, if you like, that's sort of found new energy when they've gone to Italy. It seems to be a league that maybe suits the older player.
I know it's a bit away yet, Mark, but July 28th, Juve are set to take on Lazio. Could it be a title decider?
Yeah, I think it could. I mean, you're just hoping that this kind of enforced break hasn't stopped the rhythm and the sort of winning momentum that Lazio had just been on, this phenomenal run. We are guessing, aren't we, as to how teams come out of this very unusual situation. I'd say in Germany, the kind of only main league that we've got any form reliable guide, if you like, the teams that were doing well have continued to do well, and those that were doing badly, most of them have continued to do badly. So that could be a good sign, I suppose, for Lazio, that actually hasn't made that much difference in terms of if you were winning before, you just carry on winning.
Mark, when we look at the fixtures and the schedule, it's relentless. It's non-stop. It's really going to come down to squads, isn't it? Like, and injury prevention for some of these teams. Who's probably best placed in that?
Oh, that definitely is a big tick in the Juventus box. They've got an absolutely huge squad where, every week, usually at least one of Higuain or Dybala doesn't play up front. You have players like Aaron Ramsey that, just part of that midfield rotation. Rabiot, another sort of expensive player in terms of wages, he doesn't play every week. Chiellini, the old stager, he's back from his injury problems. Their squad is, they've got two players for every position, and that probably could be decisive. They are set to bring in the five sub rule, which we've got in Germany at the moment. I think that does suit the bigger clubs, there's no doubt about that. And absolutely right to say that in terms of wall-to-wall football, I think once the Italian league comes back, over about a 36 day period, there's only 5 days when there won't be football. So they're almost a bit like Spain and the Premier League. It's almost going to be daily to make sure they finish these seasons before the Europa League and Champions League restarts in August.
Marie can't stop smiling.
Speaking of Spain, Mark, Real Madrid are set to play in the Alfredo de Stefano Stadium at Valdebeba, their training ground, obviously. Could they set a trend?
I think more teams would like to play at their training ground at the moment, because obviously, if you're playing in an 80,000 stadium and there's nobody there, that's a really unusual situation, for any kind of elite sportsman to have to deal with. And when you can play at, I think the Di Stefano holds about 5,000 or 6,000, and that feels much more manageable, I think, for the players. Won't feel as hollow. And the players are used to playing, either friendly matches or even if it's just 11v11, A team against the B team or whatever, they're used to playing with no fans at the training ground. The problem that most teams would have, and you look at the complexes at, say, Tottenham Hotspur and Chelsea, brilliant training facilities, but they haven't got the TV setup that would enable broadcasters to be able to show matches from a desired sort of standpoint, high up and stuff like that for the cameras. At least with Real Madrid, their younger teams, the B team, they actually play in the lower leagues in Spain, and so the TV setup is a lot better. And we've got this situation in Portugal where some teams are playing at a neutral venue, like a bit like St George's Park in England, where it's like a national team setup facility, and they're having to play earlier on their matches earlier on in the day because the floodlights are not up to the standard for HD quality for the TV. So that would be the reason why teams won't be playing at their training facilities. But Real Madrid have kind of got that one locked down and they're okay.
Mark, how are they going to cope with the weather? It's pretty hot here in Ireland at the moment and we're all struggling. I can't even imagine what it'd be like playing a high intensity football game in the middle of the day.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a big debate in both Spain and in Italy. In fact, it's why the Italian fixtures were only confirmed last night, because the players' union got involved and just said, the players just can't play. They can't play at lunchtime in late June or early July, particularly in the south of Italy. It's just too hot. And eventually, the kind of Serie A relented, and there are going to be some matches that kick off at the same time later on in the day. Obviously, they wanted to stagger the kickoffs for TV reasons, but the players have won that battle. I think you will see World Cup style matches at times, slower. It has to be that way. In Spain, they're not actually announcing the kickoff times until a couple of weeks before the game. They're actually going to look at the weather forecast and then assign the kickoff times, judged by what the the forecast is. Now, that puts a lot of pressure on the people that predict the weather to make sure they've got it right. The idea is that those in the sort of northern parts of Spain, Bilbao and places like that, they will play in the earlier games, and then somewhere like Seville, which is the hottest city in Europe and can reach 40 odd degrees in the summer, they could kick off 10:30 at night. So they're trying to be flexible, and that actually suits the TV companies if they can cram in another game just before midnight or something like that. So it's required a lot of thinking outside the box, to get these games on, and I think that shows the desperation really from the clubs to make sure they finish their seasons, and they'll do sort of almost anything and everything to make sure that they do.
I'd be hoping they'd be going with late night ones. Mark, thanks a million for taking our call.
Thank you.
Game on 2FM.
Now, we've had a text in about the celebrations. I hope this isn't from Billy. I've €100 worth of fireworks coming in from Krakow for the day when Henderson lifts the trophy and Liverpool win the league. Don't tell the guards.
Can we try? I hope he gets to use them on Halloween.
Easy, Ruby, will you? Leave some joy in. Isn't that mad, chatting to Mark Langdon? A 10:30 kickoff for the La Liga. I feel for the players there. Imagine hanging around all day.
That'd be grand.
What else they'd be doing? Yeah. Imagine playing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in 40 degrees of heat. I'd rather hang around at 10:30 at night.
Well, the Spanish are used to it, aren't they?
They'd be having a nap.
They'd be having a nap there for 3 hours.
Yeah. That's true.
No sympathy for them. Now, lads, more previewing. I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by Gary Murphy, and it's been a while, Gary. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you yourself?
Good. Now, we haven't talked in a little while, so I want to know everything that you've been up to. Have you gone back playing golf? Are you giving lessons? Are you going to be doing commentary? Fill us in.
I haven't played golf. I'm going to start giving lessons again next week. And I've been just doing my garden and enjoying spending some lovely time with my children and my wife.
Sounds good.
Sounds familiar.
How's the garden looking?
It kind of looks a little bit like the aftermath of a hurricane, because I've cut down a load of trees and I've yet to pull them somewhere safe. But it's been great fun with my 8-year-old, I have to say. Precious time.
Yeah, we had Mark McHugh on, or Ryan McHugh on last night. You want to get some fertiliser from him? Seaweed stuff is top notch, apparently.
Look at that. You're,
Ruby
you're,
thinks he's an expert now.
Yeah, he's lining up firewood here.
I spoke to Ryan McHugh about it last night. Anyway, Gary, what did you make it? Well, restrictions are going to lift for golf a bit more again next Monday. There will be 4 balls will be allowed to play, members and guests. But that's not really going to alleviate much pressure on golf clubs, is it?
Not really, as the clubhouse facilities and restaurants and bars still won't be open. So I guess the kind of post-round atmosphere, which for amateur golf is hugely important to go in and chat about your game, is still not going to be there. So it's still quite confined. It's kind of nicer that it's the 20 kilometer radius. You can have member guests. You can have 4 balls. So there's a little bit more scope, but it's still financially catastrophic for a lot of clubs. Now, there have been a rise in memberships because clubs are offering, they're just strapped for cash, so they've thrown out discounts and deals, and there's been a rise in that. But I think golf, as one knew it previous to COVID, is still very different. I actually played 2 days before the lockdown. I played at Carton House, and it was very unusual, really, and not the same thing.
And obviously, I read your article last Sunday, Mark, or Gary, where you said that the mini tours
are going to struggle. Sponsorship for some pros is going to dry up. You can see a whole new golfing world.
Yeah, so I think it's a really tough place for those young fellas trying to trying to make their way really on the tours. Even like even on the women's golf, you look at, you know, Leona Maguire, her first full season on the LPGA Tour, and she really hasn't played, and getting back into the States is not going to be easy and all of that. But for the players on the mini tours trying to get their way, there'll be no promotion this year onto the European Tour. I don't know if they'll even have any Challenge Tour events. And then you go down the next ladder, and a lot of those young kids who have probably been at it a couple of years might really have to look at, you know, where this is going to take them, because can they afford to hang around for another couple of years and still live that dream? So I think a lot of careers will be lost because of this, which is sad, because, you know, it's not everyone that can go straight onto tour and find a way. Some people, it takes them a bit longer, but for those players, it's going to be doubly hard, and they're very lucky to have, especially this year, the support of Team Ireland, I would say, for a lot of them, just to keep them afloat more than anything else.
You said in your column as well that golf, like many other sports, will have to take stock. What did you mean by that, Gary?
Well, I think there's always been a big issue with a member of a golf club and turning up to play your game, and they're called kind of car park members, and they really don't contribute or offer a whole lot to the club. They're not involved really in the social structure, and I think as we get out of this lockdown, how they phase that through membership payments or what, I'm not sure, but certainly I think the people that, you know, want to remain a member of a golf club will have to do a lot more than just turn up and play golf, because the model that we have at the moment to just turn up and play golf has, you know, rendered it insufficient for clubs to be financially viable. So I think moving forward, you know, if you love your golf club and if you love your sport, I think those players will have to contribute a lot more than what they actually do.
Does that go back to supply and demand, though, Gary? Do we have too many golf clubs?
We possibly do, yes. And I think that was very prevalent with the 5 kilometer, especially in Dublin, where you would have guys that were members of outside the 5K rule, but close to within 5 kilometers of a certain club. And I thought there should have been a much broader thinking on that, because we could have had people in to play golf. I think golf is a very safe sport to social distance. You know, the big danger, it was traveling to the course if you were sharing cars. And if you weren't sharing a car and you were going out to play golf, I didn't really see why it had to be the way it was. But obviously it was more of a broader lockdown for the country than just individually for golf. Golf seemed to just get tied in because of that. But times are crazy at the moment. They're crazy for amateur golfers, they're crazy for golf clubs, and they're even crazier, I think, for the professional sport as well, which is going to struggle massively to come back from this, especially in Europe.
And you mentioned Europe. Obviously, the PGA is going to return on the 11th of June, but the the European Tour is not back till the end of July, a close house with the British Masters. And they're talking about having a five-tournament swing golf, they're calling it, 5 tournaments in the UK. You think that's a good thing, do you?
I think it's all they have at the moment, Rui, because the beauty of the European Tour is the one thing, the fact that it's in so many different countries, and it's pretty much all around the world apart from South America and North America. And that was the beauty, the diversity of the tour, and it's the one thing that's really hurting them at the moment. So the fact that the headquarters are in the UK, it made sense to try do that. They've got, you know, a lot of the medical experts on board to try. All the venues that have been handpicked are venues with hotels on site that they can kind of contain everyone inside the perimeter of the golf club, so to speak. But it's just that it's the logistics of it. I was, you know, speaking to obviously a few of my bosses and whatnot at the production end, and they'll get it done because they're hugely talented people, but it's just the red tape and how impossible and expensive the whole exercise is going to be. I know Keith Pelley was saying about miking up players, but, I mean, realistically, can you see that happening? Like, can you imagine the extra cost of that? And then trying to you know, have another person in production police that, because if you've 156 players, you know, there's no doubt players are going to be saying different things. So you really got to micromanage that. And you can imagine the extra cost of that. I think it worked really well in a one-off game like the Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, that type of game. But for an actual tour, I don't think it's feasible for that to happen.
Would you be comfortable if you were playing, Gary, to have one of those mics on?
Depends how well I was playing, Marie, to be honest.
I was anti them on jockeys. They put cameras on jockeys and I never wore one. I was anti it. I don't think it's fair in any professional sports person going about their job to be mic'd or have a camera on them. I'd be anti it. Gary, you played as a pro golfer. Dunica, you were a player, rugby player, pro rugby player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it interesting, Gary, though, to hear, you know, you mentioned it there, Tiger and Rory, to hear the chat. Like, the banter wasn't great, the crack among them wasn't super, but just if you're interested in even, you know, club selection, all that, it's of interest, isn't it?
But it comes down to cost again. I mean, the famous incident was last year, the Open Championship with Shane Lowry and his caddy Bo, where he actually had a microphone right there beside him, and we heard absolutely every word of the conversation. That is something that you need more of, but it was better at the Open Championship than it is at any other tour, because they have the budget to do that. You basically need to pay people to walk around and do that, and you need a link, and there's technology to it, and you need extra sound crew and everything that goes with that. And I think the basic, especially in Europe, the model that we'll return to see on TV will certainly be a much limited production from what we've previously seen. And the other thing with players, you know, it really is at times up to the commentary to transfer that emotion from the player through the commentator's microphone. We're watching the players to see the way they can execute shots. I think it's up to the commentary team to provide that analysis. You know, we just want to see, you know, players play golf. You know, we seem to be obsessed with this whole Big Brother mindset of getting in on top and close to everything that's happening nowadays. I can't see it working in golf. I certainly wouldn't be a fan if I was still on tour playing. I don't see how it would work, because it would just feel unnatural. And when you're in a situation where you're, you know, number one, playing for a living and trying to do all of that, and you're there, you know, to appease someone else for the sake of a production cost, I don't think it's a runner, and I wouldn't be a fan of it. I think it should be changed. Maybe a couple of things in production, or maybe a couple of things in commentary. But micing up players, I'm not really sure about.
I don't know how revealing it would be. They did it in an All-Ireland final a few years back, and I think that was a bit different because, you know, there was a lot of the heat of the battle stuff, instructions from the referee. There was a few rows, and you got insight that you don't usually get from that. I don't know if it would be the same in golf. Just on it, Gary, 51 weeks of the year we've golf. Is it too much?
Is it too much? It possibly is. I think I'm of the age profile where I grew up, and my kind of first golf tournament I watched was the Masters at the start of April, and that kind of set everyone off for the season. I think there's possibly too much, but then it's brought a lot more professionals into the game. If, you know, historically the European Tour was kind of April to end of September, October, and guys kind of went off and did other things. It's given a great opportunity, and we've seen players become tournament winners or major champions because of that opportunity. And if it did streamline, the only people that will get affected are the people at the bottom. You'll still have the class at the top. Is that good for the sport as a whole? I'm not sure it is. But there is a lot of golf. There's no denying that. But then, you know, every week is a different week, and there's a unique story to that week too, and it provides its own set of circumstances, and it does go around the world too. So it's a great sport in that regard. There possibly is a little oversaturation of it, but that's just the way all sports are going. You know, we see it in rugby with, you know, summer tours, and, you know, I know nothing about playing rugby, but I'm sure if you play 30-odd matches during the season, the last thing you want to do is go down to Australia and New Zealand in the summer and play again. But that's just the demands of TV companies and everyone trying to get more money out of the sport, and it's not really for the benefit of the individuals playing the sport, I have to say.
And just before we let you go, Gary, we know golf is coming back very, very soon on our televisions. What are you looking forward to most?
I'm looking forward to, I personally think that we might see some different players come out of this, because it's a totally different dynamic to what they're going to be facing. There's not going to be any crowds. You'll certainly see more professional golfers losing golf balls in the past. And
sounds great.
Yeah, no, it will. It'll be a different atmosphere. I think it'll do better than the football has been doing without the crowds. But the players will have to adapt to that adrenaline of possibly no adrenaline. So it's going to be different, but I think golf will still look okay on TV.
Okay, Gary, thanks so much for joining us. We'll have you back next week. The USPGA will be starting and you can preview everything for us and we can't wait.
Preview.
No problem.
Thanks, Gary. Talk to you soon.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to 2FM, or to Game On, even on 2FM. I thought it was interesting to listen to Gary Murphy about who will prosper on the PGA Tour playing in front of no crowds and professionals losing golf balls. That will be interesting. We think there'll be no crowd up the fairway to spot where they go.
Maybe the mics would be a good idea then.
No, they won't. Yeah, they would, yeah. And they're cursing like mad and giving out stink. I couldn't see how they'd work.
But Ruby, on it, like, golf's a game you want to be calm and in touch with your emotions. For hurling, football, rugby, you need the crowd. I think for golf it might be nice for the players not to have them. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's a sport that will, but the big thing that golf will do, Donica, is it will be able to entertain, because you'll be able to move from player to player to player. Soccer matches, 90 minutes with no crowd and no atmosphere, could get monotonous.
Ooh, I don't know, the Bundesliga, it's been so quick though, isn't it, Marie?
Like, yeah, at times. I think that eventually they'll play more games together and jump from one game to the other, because there will be plenty of dead rubbers.
Well, they have enough games anyway. You can bounce around to any of them.
I like the crowd noise personally.
The crowd noise is great, especially in the NRL. Actually, in rugby league it's been vicious. Just because it's a quiet stadium, you can hear the collision noises.
They've got the right mix of collision noise and crowd noise.
And what they do is brilliant. Whoever's on it, honestly, they're a genius. If someone makes a break, they kind of give the old, you're like, brilliant, genius.
It's like they're pressing the button at the right time. It's great.
Who's got that job?
Right, racing, lads.
Racing, thank God for
it's on. It's live.
It's on. All
time. I'm just thrilled Jane Mangan's on the line.
Because she's saving
Thank
us.
Thank you, Marie.
Jane, welcome back.
We don't need a crowd, guys.
Oh,
we can make
you.
Our own sound effects.
Your box
Thank
office,
you very
though,
much.
Jane.
It's very kind.
Why has everyone gone quiet?
Sorry.
It's not awkward at all.
Yeah. Jane. Obviously, back this weekend, you've been handed the short show dealing with Ruby and his dad. Are you looking forward to that?
I was on the radio with Ted yesterday and I missed it. It is really nice to be back with some good racing. Yeah. You know, England resumed yesterday at Newcastle and I won't lie, I didn't watch it because it was a bunch of handicaps. And while it's great to have racing back in Britain, we want to get quality racing. When you see the declarations for the Coronation Cup later in the week, when you have Stradivarius and Anthony Van Dijk meeting, and then of course the Guineas at the weekend, that's what we really want. And I think the month of June, considering we're going to have Royal Ascot in exactly 14 days, it's going to be a bit of a roller coaster.
And I think with the Guineas, like, obviously you had the French Guineas yesterday, you had the English Guineas this weekend with Pinatubo, we said it last night, and the Irish Guineas coming the following week. It's coming thick and fast. Big names, big horses, and they're going to set up for great clashes if all these horses can go and win. The likes of Siskin for Ger Lyons, Albina for Jesse Harrington, and it just mightn't be Ballydial dominated. And there'll be lots of things happening in racing that plenty of people won't understand. So, Donica, I think we gave you a list of questions that might help people to demystify racing.
Well, I'm interested, Jane. It's funny you mentioned that there. Just even the general standard with Newcastle at the weekend, there must be so much quality. Will Irish racing learn from what's going on in England and just maybe cut its cloth so that, you know, when you're on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays, we see quality racing?
Yeah, I think everybody's been very accommodating because they understand that this is an opportunity that we don't have to compete with other sports. Ordinarily, at a weekend, there's obviously a lot of soccer on and GAA as well. But racing wants to prime itself to showcase its best best quality, essentially. And the fact that we're racing at the Curragh the first weekend is brilliant to have Group 1 action there. I think we're going to see some very good two-year-olds, names that we'll probably and hopefully follow through the summer and create a little bit of a relationship with them. I can appreciate there's a lot of horses in this country. And for people who aren't tuned in every day, it's difficult to build up a relationship or even a common name that they can follow. So hopefully we'll get something like that going on the first weekend off. And as I was saying yesterday, Newcastle, it was poor standard of racing. But for every one good horse, you have a lot of not very good horses, to put it mildly, and they have their own place too. So there'll be a lot of racing that maybe won't be shown on RTE, but we'll try and bring the quality up, myself and Ruby, and we'll try and make it some way interesting.
So give us some of those two-year-old names then that we should keep an eye out for.
I'm really glad you asked that, because this is the time of year they haven't run, so we don't know what their quality is. But you're not going to waste a good name on a horse that you don't think it merits the name. So for instance, Coolmore have named Glen Eagle's sister Madonna.
Wow.
Madonna cannot be a bad filly, because I think you'd have the wrath of a certain singer coming down top of you. There's a couple of colts, to name one or two. There's a Wembley. There's a Brazil. Capri's brother is called Brazil. So there's some very good names. And of course, I know they're not always, it's not always a foregone conclusion. There's been a couple of very slow US presidents run at the Curragh and Leopardstown, but at the same time, they must be showing something right to merit a name like Madonna.
Yeah, I have a good one, Jane. Lockdown, who's with Hugo Palmer.
Yeah, he ran today, didn't he? He didn't win, so
there goes that one then.
With a name like Madonna, you'd expect it to be good for generations. Ruby, how aware is everyone in Ireland, though, that it's the first back and it'll set a standard for every sport? You know, look, just even looking in from a rugby point of view, Gaelic football, hurling, camogie, it is important that nearly horse racing sets the trend.
Yeah, and it will, Donegal, but I mean, they have huge protocols in place, even the paraphernalia that you have to fill out and go through to attend a race meeting, even to work for the media, is pages of it. I mean, the document that HRI released was 72 pages long about the protocol. So there's huge, huge guidelines and huge precautions being taken. But yeah, it will set a standard. And it's exactly like Jane said. I mean, there are so many horses in the country. There's only X amount of good ones, but that goes for every sport, be that rugby, soccer, GAA, and horse racing is no different. I mean, you have the elite at the top and you have the amateurs at the very bottom, and fortunately for horses, it's done by talent, but there is a top and a bottom too.
Jane, how have you found it? Like, what's most looking forward to, bar talking out with Ruby and Ted, who are you most looking forward to seeing out?
I suppose, look, we want to see the younger generation. I know you were talking about Pinatubo yesterday. If he can emulate what he did last year as a juvenile, he really does have to take all the beating next weekend. I also love to see the two-year-olds starting off, the first season sires, to see how they cope. And there's an awful lot to look forward to. You have Stradivarius there, dual Ascot Gold Cup winner. He's starting out this week. And Anthony Van Dyke, hopefully on a retrieval mission, having won the Epsom Derby really impressively last year. It is undoubtedly, it was disappointing to watch classic races like at Deauville yesterday with no international competition. You maybe question the quality of the classics this year, considering it's not going to have, I suppose, horses won't have time to, say, take in multiple classics like they usually would. But it is nice to see that Jessica Harrington and Ballydoyle are sending horses to Newmarket this weekend, because it wouldn't be the same if you didn't have international competition between Britain and Ireland. And I think I could be completely wrong and we'll never know, but I would imagine Jessica Harrington would have been watching the 1000 guineas in Deauville thinking that her filly could have won it, because Alpine Star is, she's very good, and it's unfortunate that she didn't get the chance to travel over. But she's going to now meet her stablemate Albina at the Curragh, and I think it's something that the Irish viewers will benefit from. It'll make the Irish race even more competitive, rather than having one of her stars go to France and compete at Deauville.
Ruby, could you see that happening? You know, will you be looking abroad, kind of thinking, maybe I should be there? You know, could you be in the wrong spot?
Well, obviously Aidan will send a couple to Newmarket next weekend, but there's more to it than just that, Dunnick. If Jessica Harrington sent one to Deauville, she would either have to go with a French jockey or send Shane Foley to ride it. If he went to Deauville to ride, when he come back, he'd have to quarantine here for 14 days before he could ride again. Therefore, he would miss the big guineas meeting at the Curragh in 10 days' time. So other factors like that play into it. We heard Gerard Lyon saying last week on the radio, and he was on, that if Shishkin were to win at the Curragh and go to Goodwood, would Colin Keane go or not? He doesn't know, because riders, when they travel, are going to have to quarantine. It was interesting to see Ryan Moore riding in Kempton today. That means he's going to obviously ride in Newmarket at the weekend. Therefore, I don't think he can ride at the Curragh. So that will give opportunities for the other jockeys in Ballydoyle to ride their horses at the Curragh on Guineas weekend, because Ryan won't have the quarantine done here.
Hmm. From an Irish point of view, what are you most looking forward to? What one kind of down the calendar excites you?
I think I think they've rejigged it in a great way. I mean, the first weekend, you've the two meetings at the Curragh, the two Guineas meetings, and you've Leopardstown on the Sunday with the Savile Beg. You know, you rock on to the following weekend. It's coming thick and fast on again. You'll have the Derby weekend at the Curragh. You'd have the Tattersalls Gold Cup, the Irish Derby. Jump Racing is back in Limerick in the middle of June. Hopefully you'll have Kilbeggan, the Munster, or the Midlands National might be on TV as well. So there'll be plenty to watch and plenty to follow.
Yeah. Jane, thanks so much. Best of luck over the coming weeks, especially dealing with Ruby.
Actually, you've softened him up there the last couple of months. I'll have an easy job.
There is no softening that, man.
Thanks, Jane.
Thanks, Jane.
Dunnick, have we a competition winner?
We certainly do. Dick McGrath from Wexford is the winner of a beautiful O'Neill's hooded gilet. The correct answer was Paul Mescal's club was Maynooth. So congrats, Dick. You've won a beautiful O'Neill's hoodie. To see any of O'Neill's range, you can go on to O'Neill's.com, where they have brilliant gilets, shorts as worn by Paul Mescal, and brilliant garden gear. Isn't that right, Marie?
Yeah, actually, very right. I thought you were going to say, when you said garden there, I'm going to go to Ruby. Very quickly, Ruby, before we go, we got a text in. One thing I can't understand is Stradivarius in the Coronation Cup.
I'd say he's having a run for Ascot. He's going for the Ascot Gold Cup, and John Gosden wants to give him a run beforehand to peak his fitness. That's why he's going there.
All right. So that was a good question then, Hin.
Game on 2FM.